It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXD Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station, broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 49 degrees, mostly cloudy skies. They have wind speeds at 9 miles per hour from the northeast at the airport right now. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak has its own pro-choice rally. The University of Alaska is at loggerheads with their full-time employees on the faculty. And eagles are being affected by avian influenza in Alaska. Those stories, plus the federal government cancels an auction for tracts of oil and gas drilling in Cook Inlet.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden says white supremacy and those who profit from it must be rejected. NPR's Quil Lawrence reports from Buffalo, where the president met with the families of those who died in a mass shooting at a top supermarket on Saturday.
Speaking blocks away from the scene of one of the country's worst racist massacres, Biden called for a return of the 1990s assault weapons ban and for an end to racist theories in politics.
White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through our, it really is. Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more.
Cornelius Boykin lives nearby. He says he's not sure what Biden can really do.
At least it gave us something. I just want to hear him say that we're not going to tolerate this senseless act anymore.
Quil Lawrence, NPR News, Buffalo.
Police say the gunman, a self-described white supremacist, targeted black people. 10 people died, 3 were injured. Most of the victims are black. First-degree murder and attempted murder charges are now filed against the suspect in another mass shooting that took place a day after the Buffalo attack. In California, Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer announced today the charges against David Cho.
Today, we formally filed 10 counts against the defendant, Chow. The first count is murder in the first degree against Dr. John C.
Cho also faces attempted murder charges for the 5 people wounded in the attack at a Taiwanese-American church luncheon in Laguna Woods Sunday. Authorities say Cho, a Chinese-American, harbored anti-Taiwan sentiment. Tensions between China and Taiwan, which Beijing claims as its own territory, are the highest in decades. The federal government has paid more than $2 billion toward funeral costs for people whose deaths have been attributed to COVID-19. Blake Farmer with member station WPLN in Nashville reports only about half of surviving families have started an application.
The benefit is up to $9,000 per death. Families have to upload funeral home and cemetery receipts, along with a death certificate that has to say COVID. FEMA spokesperson Jacqueline Rothenberg says the process is meant to make sure the money goes to the right people, but she says there's much more money to be claimed.
It's not just as if you submit an application and it, you know, it goes into a black hole. We actually have people you can talk to on the phone who can work with you and look at your case and review it and to make sure that you've submitted everything.
So far, states clustered in the South have the highest rate of survivors applying for funeral benefits, while the Northwest has the lowest rate. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
More than 1 million people have died from COVID here. It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
after a draft of a Supreme Court opinion indicating they would overturn the Roe v. Wade decision was leaked in early May, people around the country have been rallying in support of the nearly five-decade-old decision. In Kodiak, that took the form of a gathering of demonstrators, some of whom have been advocates locally since the early 90s. KMXT's Dylan Simard has this report.
On a sunny and breezy Saturday afternoon, over 70 people gathered in Sargent Park in downtown Kodiak to rally in support of the Roe v. Wade decision enshrining the right to get an abortion. For many of the attendees, the issue was deeply personal, and for some, it was not the first time they had rallied in Kodiak in support of abortion rights. Lori Seavey has been a pro-abortion rights activist since the early 90s. She knows many people in attendance at the rally.
Peggy Smith and I and a large number of the women here had a group called Kodiak Voices for Choice. We gathered, we had protests, we had speakers, we did education in the high schools. We were extremely active because, as now, there was a huge threat to the woman's choice then.
Peggy Smith, one of the original members of Kodiak Voices for Choice, had an experience when she was younger that made her a dedicated advocate for abortion rights.
I've helped a friend with an illegal abortion. Two young girls, we had to fly to New York City. It was illegal. So we go there, this man walks up, he goes, "I'm the man you want to talk to." He took my girlfriend, who was getting the abortion, and said I could not go. So I sat on the bench at United Airlines for 4 hours and waited, not knowing if she was going to die on the table.
Among the crowd are several girls in their teens carrying signs with pro-abortion rights slogans on them. Kylie Anderson is 17 and says that at her stage in life, her support for Roe v. Wade is a given.
If I did get pregnant, I would want to get an abortion. Like, it wouldn't even be a second thought. Like, I am in no position to raise a child right now. So knowing that that option could be taken away from me and knowing that birth control could also be taken away from me next is horrifying.
The rally lasted until about 2 p.m. Organizers say that there may be more events, especially if Roe v. Wade is overturned in the coming weeks. The right to an abortion is enshrined in the state constitution of Alaska. Anti-abortion advocates are hoping to begin a constitutional convention in November, which could eliminate that right. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
The University of Alaska has taken unilateral action to increase salaries for its full-time faculty, despite ongoing federal mediation with the faculty's union on a new collective bargaining agreement.
This is an unusual step for sure.
That's UA President Pat Pitney speaking about the unprecedented action approved by the Board of Regents during a special meeting on Monday. Pitney said mediation has failed to bring the university and the United Academics, or UNAC, significantly closer together in terms of a new 3-year collective bargaining agreement.
And so last Friday, we declared that we were at impasse.
With time running out to get a new contract approved and funded by the legislature before the session ends, Pitney says the university feels compelled to act.
It is the 11th and a half hour.
UA faculty have only received a 1% raise over the past 5 years, and among provisions in the faculty contract submitted to the legislature is a 3.5% salary hike for the new fiscal year, which starts July 1st, followed by a 2.5% and a 2% raise the following 2 years. Pitney says the increases are consistent with those in other UA employee agreements before the legislature.
UNAC's compensation and benefits position, by contrast, was more than 4 times the level the university is offering. Unsustainable by any standard.
United Academics has adjusted our proposals to try to reach agreement with the help of the federal mediator.
UNAC chief negotiator, University of Alaska's Fairbanks math education professor Tony Rickert, says the faculty union wants to keep talking.
This is a very puzzling action by President Pitney and the Board of Regents. They seem to think that the mediation is over, and it's not. We mutually agreed to a session that we have yet to have.
Rickert says UNAC will be at the third and final mediation session scheduled for Wednesday.
And we expect the university to be there too.
It's unclear if the university will attend, but UA lead negotiator David Eisenberg told Regents yesterday that declaring an impasse only means the university is not legally required to keep negotiating.
That said, obviously, we are going to receive and consider any reasonable proposals from the union.
There's some speculation that a UA faculty contract could be considered by the legislature outside the regular session, but President Pitney said a special session is unlikely in an election year. An eagle that died in the Sitka National Historical Park this month tested positive for the avian influenza. A second eagle that died in the park was also tested for the virus, and the results are pending. Jennifer Cedarleaf is the avian director at the Alaska Raptor Center. She says a Sitkin reported a third eagle in his yard on Lance Drive that was exhibiting symptoms of the virus.
The last time I heard, he was laying under a bush in the guy's, in the gentleman's yard, and I told him, you know, just leave the bird be and let me know what's happening and I can come check it out later.
Cedarleaf says a handful of bald eagles have tested positive for the virus in Alaska so far this month, including several in Dutch Harbor, two in Anchorage, and one in the Matsu Valley. The highly pathogenic bird flu is the worst the country has seen since 2015 and has a high mortality rate for raptors. She says neurological symptoms are one indicator that a bird may be suffering.
Like holding its head strange or having tremors or like having a hard time walking, like stumbling almost. Those are really good signs for avian influenza.
She says people who own chicken should keep a close eye on their coops. Those with indoor birds should also be very aware. She recommends leaving shoes outside in a bucket to prevent tracking in infected bird feces. On Friday, the Alaska Senate passed a bill that would recognize the state's 229 federally recognized tribes. If Governor Mike Dunleavy signs the bill, the state would recognize Alaska's tribes the same way the federal government does, as sovereign nations. Bethel Democratic Representative Tiffany Zolkuski introduced the bill. It passed in the House, but it sat in the Senate State Affairs Committee since February. In the meantime, a ballot initiative was started by Alaskans concerned about a lack of formal state recognition of the tribes in Alaska. City and Borough of Juneau City Assembly member Wasalgikak Barbara Blake is one of the three co-chairs of the ballot initiative, which aims to do the same thing as the bill.
The reason that it meant so much to all of us was to tell Alaskans and to tell all of our people that yes, the state does in fact care about our tribes, the original sovereigns of this place, recognizes our sophisticated form of government that we've always held.
Blake says the bill may put an end to legal battles between the state of Alaska and tribes. There have been multiple legal and jurisdictional questions between tribes and the state that have led to costly lawsuits.
And also sends a message to the world that they would like to have a better working relationship with our native people and our native entities and grow that so that we can do a better job taking care of every citizen of Alaska.
Because of a Senate amendment, the bill goes back to the House for consideration. It's expected to pass because the House approved the legislation last year. If this bill does not pass before the end of the session on May 19th, then it will go to the voters in the form of a ballot measure. If it does pass, that ballot measure will be canceled. The federal government won't auction off tracts for oil and gas drilling in Cook Inlet this year. The Department of the Interior announced this week it is canceling a pending auction for up to 1 million acres of leases, capping a tumultuous timeline of stopping and starting for the proposed plan. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more on how Alaskans are reacting.
In an emailed statement, Interior Department spokesperson Melissa Schwartz says the cancellation's due to a lack of interest from the industry. Kara Moriarty finds that logic baffling. She's president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, and she says companies don't usually let on as to whether they'll participate in a sale or not. She says she doesn't even know.
Participating in lease sales is a highly guarded secret, if you will, because companies don't want to tip their hand to their competition that they might be interested in an area.
She says any lack of comments to the department from oil and gas companies doesn't necessarily signal a lack of interest.
The only way to find out what the true interest is by holding the lease sale. There's nothing lost if nobody shows. And that's happened in the past.
Opponents of the now canceled sale, on the other hand, did get out thousands of comments submitted to the feds. Over 90,000, says Liz Mehring. She's advocacy director for local nonprofit Cook Inlet Keeper, which has led a fervent campaign against the sale, including an art sale to raise money and awareness for efforts last year. And Mehring says those efforts have paid off.
First, it's an amazing feeling. It's just so nice to have a win and to remind people that everybody's actions and everybody commenting and taking time out of their day to testify or to do all of the things that our community does to advocate for, you know, the future we want in Cook Inlet do really matter.
She says the cited lack of industry interest doesn't really come as a surprise. The feds canceled Cook Inlet lease sales for the same reason in 2006, 2008, and then again in 2010.
However, we also hope that the industry as well is looking at the strong local opposition and the serious concerns and the fact that people aren't going to be quiet. And so at the same time, also thinking that could have certainly playing a role as well.
The Biden administration hit pause on this lease sale in early 2021, part of a broader order geared at combating climate change. The process resumed following a lawsuit from Alaska and several other states, though the federal government's always able to cancel lease sales, even once environmental impact statements are already filed. Bigger picture, Mehring says she hopes for more permanent rejections of oil and gas in Cook Inlet. The order doesn't necessarily cancel all lease sales in the inlet, just this one. She also says it's important to note that the sale wouldn't have impacted gas prices for years to come. Alaska politicians, including Governor Mike Dunleavy and U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan, have said on social media the move shows a disregard for the high gasoline prices consumers are currently paying at the pump. Moriarty, with the industry group, says the decision sends a message that the Biden administration isn't interested in oil and gas development coming from American sources. The department also announced it's not holding two lease sales in the Gulf of Mexico.
So it just doesn't make sense as to why you wouldn't want your future oil and gas for energy security as well as for Alaska, for Alaskan consumers, especially when we're talking about Cook Inlet, to come from America.
And she says without federal leases, the industry will turn the focus to state ones in Cook Inlet. The state of Alaska auctioned off 3.3 million acres of oil and gas leases in Cook Inlet last June, resulting in 8 successful bids from 2 different companies. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
There's an angst building among Alaska's liberals as they contemplate the special primary election to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. That's the race with 48 candidates. In the first ever state election by mail, the list will be narrowed to 4 candidates. In this pick one primary, Alaskans on the left have a special concern that's not as acute among conservatives. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Leah Berman-Williams is a mathematician on the faculty at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's a Democrat and for weeks could not decide which candidate to vote for.
There are 5 or 6 that I think would be excellent. Are any of those candidates going to make it through the gauntlet of the primary? And should I be even bothering to think strategically?
Williams is looking forward to the special general election in August when she'll have a chance to rank 4 candidates. But in this special primary, she can only choose one. Her concern is that liberal voters will split every which way and none of their candidates will advance.
I worry about that a lot. I have seen no consensus about who there's no coalescing around a single progressive candidate.
Williams isn't the only one. Democrats and progressives have a smaller share of the Alaska electorate to start with, and they don't want to split it. On social media, you can find them casting about, testing strategic theories, and taking each other's temperature. Vote for Al Gross, some say, because he's got the best name recognition. Others fret that he's not a strong enough contender now that the Democratic Party has broken with him. The far left is drawn to Santa Claus, the North Pole city councilman, for his ideological purity. but some question his viability since he isn't accepting campaign contributions. Many Democrats like former legislator Mary Peltola, but worry labor voters won't forgive her 2005 vote to cut teacher retirement. They also like Anchorage Assemblyman Chris Constant, but wonder if he's got statewide appeal. And so it goes. What progressive voters fear is squandering their votes and allowing for conservatives to advance. Pollster Ivan Moore says there's not much chance of a shutout by either side. He recently conducted a poll not commissioned by any candidate or campaign. Let's start with Moore's caveats.
I hate to say this, but to a certain extent, you got to take things with a pinch of salt because there'll be a lot of jumping around, right? This really is snapshot in time.
So for what it's worth, his poll showed Republicans Sarah Palin and Nick Begich were leading the pack, followed by Gross. After those three, a lot of candidates were bunched in the middle. Looking at the top five Republican candidates, Moore says it's not clear more than two will advance.
So most of the Republicans have gone over and are voting for one of Sarah Palin or Begich, and that doesn't leave much for the other three. So it's going to be tough for them.
If Moore is right about that, the concentration of Republican votes on just two candidates virtually assures that conservatives can't be shut out. And it leaves room for as many as two non-Republicans to advance. And yet, the liberal angst is real. Anchorage healthcare professional Carrie Harris feels it.
I really like Chris Constant. I really like Mary Peltola and Santa Claus.
Harris says she's listening to friends and people on social media whose opinion she values to learn more, and she plans to vote strategically. As for Williams, the mathematician in Fairbanks, she gave up on working the numbers and just chose the candidate she likes best.
I think the primary with 48 people, it's just too complicated to try to be trying to strategize our way into the general.
Williams filled in the oval for Peltola, added the necessary signatures, and dropped her ballot in the mail. For voters still deciding, ballots must be postmarked by June 11. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
There's a lot of talk today about fake news. Well, here are some stories that could have started it. The legend is that chocolate milk is made from tainted milk. Dairy's too cheap to throw away unusable milk. Add chocolate to hide the bad taste. This story started out as a schoolyard rumor spread by kids. But it took on a new life in the 1990s when the introduction of prepared coffee drinks in bottles and cans inspired people to extend the children's tale to adult beverages. The milk in chocolate milk and coffee drinks is as carefully tested and regulated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as any other form of milk. A few years ago, before the Gulf War, Barbara Walters did a news story on gender roles in Kuwait, in which she reported that Kuwaiti wives traditionally walk several paces behind their husbands. She returned to Kuwait after the war and noticed that women were now walking several paces ahead of their husbands. And when Walters asked a Kuwaiti woman how so much social progress has been accomplished in so little time, the woman replied, "Landmines." How it spread? Well, by word of mouth and email, starting shortly after the end of the Gulf War. And the truth is that this is the latest version of a classic urban legend that has been around as long as landmines themselves. From chocolate milk to war, the term fake news may not be new, but mistakes are made, for we are all just human, and real lies don't stay hidden for very long. The truth will always be revealed to those interested. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
To better understand the needs and serve our community, the 2022 Kodiak Health and Well-Being Survey is now open to Kodiak residents aged 18 and older. The survey results help healthcare and social service providers focus on what is most important to those of us who live and work on the island. It also helps attract grant funding to help improve health and social services. The survey is anonymous, takes about 10 minutes, and can be completed on a smartphone or tablet. At the end, participants can opt to enter a drawing for a cash prize of up to $500 by emailing their contact information. Look for a survey invite in this week's mail or access the survey on the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center website.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday. It is the 17th day of May, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:42. It won't set again until 10:31, which will give us 16 hours and 49 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 58 seconds. Our record high for this date was 68 degrees set in 1942, and our record low was 28 set in 1966. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:13 this afternoon. That will be a 7.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:26 p.m. of 1.9 feet. We do have another extreme low tide tomorrow morning at 10:30, minus 2.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:32 this afternoon. That will be 13.5 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:11 tonight, a 2.6-foot tide. And your very low tide for tomorrow morning will happen at 10:58 tomorrow morning and be minus 3.8 feet in Larson Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Variable 10 today, seas to 4 feet. Variable 10 tonight, becoming west 15 after midnight, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, west 15, seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 15 today, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, west 15, seas to 3 feet. And for Wednesday, west 15, seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac Bay, variable less than 10 today, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, west 10, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northeast 10, becoming variable less than 10 this afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, west 10, seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay. The City of Kodiak Public Works Department has announced that they will have to temporarily close Bartell Avenue. That's the cutoff road between Mill Bay and Rezanov, where AAA Worldwide Movers is. It'll be closed tomorrow through Thursday to install a new water main. The road will reopen at the end of the day on Thursday. During the closure, traffic controllers will be in attendance to provide local access only to Worldwide Movers. Please use alternate routes otherwise. If you have any questions, contact Steve Wilson, Maintenance Supervisor, at 907-486-8060. Kodiak Public Broadcasting's Board of Directors will be holding their regular monthly meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. If you would like to sit in on the meeting, please call the station at 486-3181, or you can send an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org, and a link will be provided to you before the meeting. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to watch the web stream. The web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those of you who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. You're invited by the Kodiak Pride to join them in a rock painting party. Join the Kodiak Pride Committee for a fun afternoon of painting rocks. It's sponsored by the Coast Guard Enlisted Association's National Office. Rocks and painting supplies will be provided, but feel free to bring your own. That's happening next Saturday at the Nimitz Gazebo. That's on Old Tom Stiles Road between 12 and 2 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.